everyone. Welcome to the Middle East today. Coming to you from Beirut, I'm Mariam Saleh. After the latest attack against Egyptian security checkpoints in the port city of Al Arish in the Sinai region, which led to the killing of 16 Egyptian border guards, many have been posing questions as to the future of Israel's interests in Egypt and perhaps the region. Muslim Brotherhood has blamed the Israeli Mossad for the attacks, and Hezbollah Secretary General has stated that Israel is most to benefit from such incidents. Today, we'll try to break up these statements and analyze the situation with my guest today. I'm joined by Mr. Hisham Safieddine, his political analyst and freelance journalist. We're also joined by Mr. Christopher Walker, journalist also joining us from London. He was former Moscow and Middle East correspondent of the Time. And I want to welcome you both to the show. Let me start with you, Mr. Safieddine. Do you have any idea about the identity of the attackers and why they would do such kind of an attack against Egyptian police?
Well, I mean, we still don't know exactly who these people are. There are news that the Israelis have handed over some bodies of people allegedly involved in the attack to the Egyptian authorities. The general consensus is that these are some form of jihadist, or I hate to use the term, but this is the term being used, or Islamist, radical Islamist groups. And these kinds of attacks tend to be really generally operated by three types of groups. It's either, you know, groups that are actually motivated or pushed by intelligence services, so it very well might be a possibility that the Mossad is behind this, even if indirectly, or it's actually groups that are radical Islamist groups that have their own agendas, maybe possibly linked to Al-Qaeda. And the third type of groups are groups that are actually have possibly grievances, whether that things have to do with smuggling, they have territorial disputes, they are, you know, belong to some of the Sinai tribes, and they actually have vendettas, or they have something against the Israeli, the Egyptian army, and also, of course, they have no love lost towards Israel. So
now, it seems all sides have denounced this incident. They said it has nothing to do with Islam, and that such incidents should not happen in the name of Islam. What kind of groups? I mean, extremist Muslim groups. They have their own agendas. You said, what kind of an agenda? I mean, we're talking about.
Well,
there.
I mean, we should look at this more in a political sense and not in a religious sense. Generally speaking, it could be. This is just a possibility that they still see the Egyptian army as illegitimate. That the Egyptian army does not represent what they think of as a righteous, proper government in Egypt. Possibly that the Egyptian army is not on the side totally of Islamist forces in Egypt, that the Egyptian army is now at odds with the Salafis in Egypt. That's one possibility. They could also be motivated by governments that actually support these groups, possibly in the Gulf. We don't really know. But I think the more important question is the fact that this actually happened in Sinai, and hopefully we'll discuss this, what the ability of these groups to act independently and to attack the Egyptian army, and the army's response, which just happened this morning on Wednesday, what does that mean to the future of the border security in
yes,
that
definitely.
Region?
We'll be talking about that. But let me ask Mr. Walker, now, when you hear statements from the Islam Muslim Brotherhood saying that they blame the Israeli Mossad, specifically, and you have also Hamas, and even Hezbollah has said that Israel is to benefit most from this. How would you analyze these statements?
I think to an extent Israel will benefit, because the Israelis have been very worried that there hasn't been sufficient policing of the Sinai since the overthrow of President Mubarak. They think it's been neglected by the new powers that be in Cairo. But on the other hand, to activate and motivate so many people would almost give the Mossad superhuman powers. They certainly may have played a part in provoking it, but they would, these people who took part and were not, I don't think, Mossad members. And there is this unholy alliance you have between the very extreme jihadists who I think would like to, I agree with your contributor, who really are disturbed, distressed and frustrated by the fact that what they see as the real revolution of Tahrir Square hasn't taken place, and that the Egyptian army still has its strength. It's very significant, I think, that one of the attacks took place against a cement plant in El Arish, which is part of the huge industrial empire of the Egyptian army. Mm-hmm. So there are messages being exchanged here. But the further thing that one has to look at is the fact that the Sinai, even before the overthrow of Mr. Mubarak, was gaining a lawless reputation, with the Bedouin becoming radicalized and the enormous spaces there providing training grounds for people able to learn the skills of terrorism.
Yes. Yeah, so do you think that this place could go out of the out of control from the military?
Well, I think it could stretch to that. It's a very sensitive position, because you've got Israel on one side and Egypt on the other, with a peace treaty that doesn't actually allow the Egyptians a free hand. They have to ask the Israelis if they can increase the number of various of their troops and weaponry there. Mm-hmm. And then at the same time, you've got Gaza, where Hamas is at loggerheads with the traditional Palestinian leadership in the West Bank. Mm-hmm. And anybody could brand anybody. I think we've got to really wait and see until one or two of these people are caught, so we can see who they are, rather than speculating alone.
Yes. Now, Mr. Safieddine, the military has said that they have attacked certain places where they believe those militants do exist, and they have killed several of their members. Do you think that they can really control the area once more?
Well, I just want to say first that this is the first such attack on Egyptian soil since the October of 1973, and the reports say that they've actually used airstrikes. What they've done is criminal in any way, because we don't know whether they're really killing people who live there or they're killing these actual militants, like most of these strikes that the U.S. tends to use all across the region. And it's quite a shame. I think the military has failed its first test, that they've actually ended up attacking Egyptian soil in the first instance of disagreement with the Israelis. The border itself is not huge per se, but Sinai is. So they may be able, they may end up having to actually increase their presence across the border. I want to just mention that it's a double-edged sword, this what happened in terms of Israel's benefit. Mm-hmm. Because at one hand, as your host from London is saying, rightly so, the Egyptians, they might ask for more security at the border. Bringing in more Egyptian troops first means having to renegotiate the treaty, and second, it means that unless these troops are under the direct control of some joint committee with the Israelis, you never know how this military presence is going to play out in the long run. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, eventually it might be not to the benefit of Israel, so of the Zionist state. So, again, they may be able to increase their control and the security measures across the border. They are actually trying to now destroy most of the, or close down most of the tunnels that connect Egypt to Gaza. Again, a very ironic and sad and tragic twist to who is actually now closing them. Mm-hmm. So we may see a lot of that before we see any serious increase in troops, because the increase in troops, as I said, is a lot more unpredictable and dangerous thing for the Israelis, and they probably would want to say more intelligence people across the border, maybe more cooperation in terms of possibly raising more barriers across the border, things like that.
Do you think that this proves that perhaps President Morsi and the military might see eye to eye when it comes to really securing the border over there?
I think they don't see exactly eye to eye. Morsi, again, I believe, hasn't attended the funeral of the military who have died. They probably see eye to eye in terms of having a very nationalistic agenda of definitely making sure that Egyptian military alone has a say in Sinai. How much they're willing to cooperate with the Israelis, if I can, I think Morsi has more of a negative approach, which means we don't cooperate, but we don't escalate against the Israelis. And the military, the leadership itself, is a lot more probably willing to engage in security engagement. So they're both kind of on the same side of the fence, but they're not, I don't think they're both see eye to eye on this.
All right, we're joined on the phone by Mr. Yahya Ghanem from Al Ahram newspaper. He's joining us on the phone from Cairo. Mr. Ghanem, how do you look at the incident, especially since it came 1 week after the visit of Ismail Haniyeh to Egypt? I mean, are there certain messages, perhaps, to the Palestinians specifically in this? What do you think?
I believe there is much of a significance of the incident, and especially if we relate it to the timing of the visit. There seems to be, for me, there seems to be an attempt from a third party to try to preempt, to abort the apparent future good relations between the two governments, the government of Egypt, the new government of Egypt, and the government in Gaza. So it is very apparent, very evident.
All right, so how do you think, how detrimental is this incident to Morsi's presidency?
How do I what?
How detrimental is this incident? I mean, what's happening right now at the border, how detrimental is it to Morsi's presidency, do you think?
Are you asking about the impacts of the incident?
Yes.
Okay, and well, for me, there seems to be two kinds of media, media campaigns. One, and we all know where it comes from, which have taken advantage over that incident, and they try. Those campaigns—they're trying to sabotage the good relations that started recently between the two governments. And there seems to be some other kind of media which campaigns to be more prudent in judging the incidents and the perpetrators, and they are trying to put a brake on that breakaway train, metaphorically speaking, if we use that metaphor about the relations between the two parties. So hopefully that latter kind of media campaigns would win eventually, would win the hearts and the minds of the Egyptian public.
All right, we'll go now to London, to Mr. Walker. Do you think that the Egyptian military will change its tactics in the Sinai region, perhaps add more troops to the area?
Yes, I think that's the case. Of course, we've already seen these helicopter gunships in operation very significantly, as one of your earlier guests mentioned, the first time missiles fired in that region, since the war, the last war there. That is very, very significant and a sign of the escalation in the tension. Then when the tunnels are closed down, there will need to be an enormous number of more Egyptian troops to keep them closed, because they constantly keep reopening. Not only are they supplying the people of Gaza with weapons for the radicals, but they're also supplying very necessary foodstuffs. This is why this whole area is a tinderbox. And we haven't mentioned yet, but not only did President Morsi not feel he could attend the funeral of the 16 dead Egyptians in Cairo, the funerals, but actually some very extreme language was used against the Prime Minister he's just appointed. Basically, some of the families accused their new government of being dogs in that they had not defended properly these 16 victims, mm-hmm. who, when you come to think of it, should not really have succumbed to being killed by a raiding ragtag force.
Mr. Walker, do you believe that do you believe that the Camp David Accord would allow any such change at the border with Israel? What is the future of this accord?
Well, you know that the Camp David Accords are flexible, but they mean that first the Egyptians, and they have already done that this week, they have to go to the Israelis to get permission to increase certain forms of armaments, mm-hmm. and numbers of men. And I think that flexibility will be tested, but it is in Israel's interest that any of these groups should be prevented from entering further and disturbing at least what is a relatively stable situation in Egypt. Because don't forget that these jihadists are not satisfied with the Islamic Brotherhood. They want something far more extreme than that to be in power.
Before I come back to you, Mr. Fayyadeen, I'm joined on the phone by Mr. Jamal Zaidi from Al Ahram magazine. Mr. Zaidi, thank you for being with us. I want to ask you about the U.S.'s position on groups, such groups that went on with these attacks. What do you think that the U.S. has turned a blind eye to the fact that these groups exist and that they have come out of control from the United States, whether in Egypt or in Syria, even?
What can I tell you? I mean, situation on the ground. On the ground, there is some terrorist groups, and they are cooperating with Hamas groups, and they are testing the new government and the Egyptian army. And what happened during the dawn, hours ago, that the Egyptian army attacked these terrorist centers in Sinai, and I do believe they are capable to get rid of them. I would like to make a comment regarding the Camp David Accord. Mm-hmm. I mean, your guest said something about that Egypt has to go and get permission from Israel. This should not be this way. I mean, this is an international treaty, the Camp David, the peace treaty. And I do believe that Egypt and Israel have to sit on the table and they have to rediscuss the treaty again to allow both of them to fight terrorism in the region.
All right, Mr. Safieddine, do you think that with the issue of Palestine, that the military wants to show the United States that it can really be part of its interest still in Egypt?
Well, first let me say that the claim that they're cooperating with Hamas is yet unfounded, and the Egyptian army itself is actually had engaged, especially the leadership, in terrorist acts against the Egyptian people from the beginning of the revolution. So I find it very problematic to describe things the way that the person had just did. I think that we know someone like Sami Anan, the chief of staff of the Egyptian army, is an extremely close ally to the United States. I don't think that the Egyptian army needs to prove anything beyond what it's already done. They think of this not simply in terms of what the United States wants, but of their own power in Egypt. Today, the Egyptian army and SCAF itself, the authority of the Egyptian army, the legitimacy, is under attack. And so this, for them, is an increased reason to reinforce their strength and sovereignty in Sinai. And unfortunately, they don't seem to think the same way when it comes to their sovereignty of moving their troops in Sinai vis-a-vis the Israelis. So the United States itself is definitely interested in reining in and controlling and securing the border for the Israelis. So I think they have their own reasons, regardless of what the United States thinks, to actually crack down on these militants.
Now, we've seen popular protests not only against the military but also against Israel and the Israeli ambassador, calling for the expulsion of the ambassador. Do you think that they see both sides as being part of the major troubles in the country?
I think most Egyptians, of course, think of the Israelis as a cause of trouble, but we should not overestimate the amount of anger towards the Israelis today in Egypt, in the sense that the protests and the attacks against the embassy itself has not been large scale, and we have to actually see that and we have to read that before we make any conclusions. And I think largely is because most Egyptians today are genuinely concerned about their own being and their own safety and security and the huge transformations, the internal transformations taking place inside Egypt.
Yes, one final comment from Mr. Jamal Zaidi, who's still joining us on the phone. I want to get your comments on our guest statements and also on how do you think, what is the future of the relations between Egypt and Palestine in light of such incidents?
In fact, the relation between Egypt and the Palestinian territories and Gaza now is passing through a very critical time, because, I mean, President Morsi and the new government had to prove that the national security of Egypt is over any other interest with Gaza and the Hamas government. I mean, Egypt comes first. And that's why I do see the Egyptian government is very weak towards the terrorist attack. And President Morsi himself, he didn't show as a strong president, I mean, in face of this crisis. And the only strong reaction came from the Egyptian army. And I do believe regarding the Palestinian issue had to be taken to negotiations between the Israelis and the Palestinians, because we still have, a very critical political crisis in the area. And as long as we still facing this crisis, you will see attacks like on the Egyptian-Israeli borders, and you will see unstable region in the Middle East.
Right, right. Thank you very much, Mr. Zaidi. Mr. Walker, also final comment for you. We have very little time. I want to know about the U.S.'s position in this when it comes to the military or to groups, to extremist groups that exist in the area.
Yes, I think as a strengthening of the Egyptian military force and the Israelis will cooperate with that to a certain extent, but a very dangerous few weeks to come, a tinderbox. We haven't seen the end by any means of this crisis, which of course does have roots. It goes back to the radicalization of the Bedouin. You remember they took over a hotel near Sharm el-Sheikh. They've attacked tourists, foreign tourists.
Right.
There's a lot of anarchy going on inside Sinai.
Right, right. Quick comment, just 30 seconds. Your final statement, please.
Final statement is the real culprits in this is, regardless of who actually did the attack, is the Israelis and the Egyptian leadership, the army leadership. I think we have to insist on strengthening relations between the Gaza Strip and the Egypt, and not necessarily the military. And I think the first measures that have to be taken is a regaining of sovereignty from this shackling agreement with the Israelis before we can speak of any real sovereignty towards the Bedouin, which existed in Sinai, and they've, you know, long before anyone from Cairo came to control them.
All right, Shams Afiyeddin, I want to thank you very much for being with us. I also want to thank Mr. Christopher Walker joining us from London. We're also joined by Mr. Jamal Zaidi and Dr. Yahya Ghanem, who both joined us from Cairo on the phone. Our email is metoday@presstv.com. Stay with Press TV. Goodbye for now.